That's right, my dudes and dudettes, we're not done. We still have a whole hour of live sports talk here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. It is indeed the 6. I'm Elijah Campbell, going to be maneuvering you through this next hour of Titans talk, and we're going to sprinkle a little bit of Celtics Heat preview because that's what's coming on after me, after I get done preaching to you all for an hour. It is going to be a very pivotal Game 5, one of which I know our producer behind the glass, Jared Cassidy, is pumped for as our resident Celtics fan. Pumped, maybe a little nerves. He's wearing his Red Sox hat right now, so I can tell you that Jared's ready to roll for tonight's game.
A little bit of both going on. I've told you many a times through text that this is they don't play the Heat very well, so that obviously is always in the back of my head, but man, even series, it's like it's almost like the first four games never happened.
As even as a series it can get for a series that involves two teams just beating the absolute hell out of each other game after game. So we'll get into that a little bit before we leave you here tonight. But one of the biggest news here in the Nashville sports news cycle is this week's Titans OTAs. Now, there's been a lot about Ryan Tannehill, Malik Willis, that whole thing that got completely blown out of proportion, and Ryan Tannehill basically talking until his lung capacity hit zero before taking any questions about how he didn't mean for all of that to get misconstrued and that he has no problem mentoring Malik Willis. I want to try to limit the amount of times I say mentor during the show because I know that it is beating a dead horse here in this market. But what I wanted to touch on Titans OTAs is all of this concern about Treylon Burks, the Titans' first-round draft pick from Arkansas that they drafted a mere minutes after trading away A.J. Brown, who, as we all know, is the best receiver the Titans have had since Derek Mason. I think that's a pretty easy declaration we can make there. So there's going to be some unrealistic expectations for Treylon Burks. And so and he's going to be under a microscope. Because look, even on A.J. Brown's worst season statistically, which was last year because he missed some games, he had 869 yards. I think if you get 869 yards out of Treylon Burks this season, you are counting your lucky stars. You say that is a really good first-round draft pick. But the expectations are going to be for him to somewhat replace the production of A.J. Brown. That's 23% of the targets from last year in the passing game. This offense, in the passing game specifically, didn't look hot in the games A.J. Brown didn't play. So now when you draft someone who has had draft comps to A.J. Brown, you expect him to come in here and mirror either the playing style or the production. And the Titans are going to aim for him to replace him in the playing style category, but with some realistic expectations that it's not going to be 1,100 yards in the first season. It might be. I just highly doubt it. So with rookie OTAs, or mini rookie camp, plus OTAs, a lot of the discussion is Treylon Burks out of shape? Because he was pulled on the first day of rookie minicamp. He was pulled after like 30 minutes, and there was an inhaler involved. A lot of the reports say that he seemed out of shape. I can't vouch for that because I was not there on the first day of rookie minicamp. However, I was there on the second day of rookie minicamp, and now did he look underwhelming at times, I guess, in 7-on-7? If you mean underwhelming as in he dropped a pass in the last play of practice. Malik Willis hit like through an absolute dime right in the hands, went straight through his hands. That might have looked off. That looked off. Like that was something you want your first-round draft pick, who you have drafted right after trading A.J. Brown, to corral. Especially when you're in an environment which you know he's not going to get hit. 7-on-7, rookie minicamp. No one's wearing pads, wearing shorts. You have a helmet on. But it almost seemed like he did hear the footsteps from Theo Jackson on that play. He just missed the ball. Stuff happens. And I try not to take too much of that into account when watching this practice because there's a lot of variation. There's all variables here at play. And how someone looks in rookie minicamp will not be what they are whenever they put actual pads on and are having actual full-length football practices. So I understand that. And I also understand, too, that especially with wide receivers. Teron Davenport has been very vocal about this, and so has Chris Sanders. With the training you do for the combine isn't football training necessarily, because you're training for the event. It's like when you're studying for the ACT, like you learn different tricks on how to write your essay better on the ACT because, or certain things you learn, not because you're absorbing knowledge, because you're trying to play towards a test. You're studying for the test itself, very test-specific preparation. I feel like it's the same way with Treylon Burks. So he wasn't in top-notch shape for the first day. I think shape-wise, he looked fine in the second day of rookie minicamp. Nothing to where I was watching him, and the thing wasn't, it wasn't going through my mind, oh man, this guy looks like he is just really out of shape compared to everybody else. Didn't wow me, but I wasn't leaving that practice saying, this guy is out of shape. So I didn't notice that, but a lot has been made about him being out of shape. Mike Vrabel's been asked about it a few times, and Trevor Maddich, even on Stillman and Company yesterday, always a good interview, but Trevor was talking about that if there is serious concern with Treylon Burks' physical shape or his, I guess, physical conditioning, it could maybe liken him to at least one player that Tennessee Titans fans do not want to hear in terms of comparisons to Treylon Burks.
Yeah, if it's me, I'm looking at him thinking, okay, that's a flake, and I'm thinking Isaiah Wilson, the first-round draft choice, offensive tackle out of Georgia from a couple of years ago that came in and just completely flaked out for reasons that had nothing to do with talent. And now they don't have a first-round draft choice offensive tackle in the mix, right, because Wilson's not there. Well, Burks, I'm thinking if I'm a player in that locker room, Burks is a threat to become that guy because he can't even show up in good enough shape to get through the first half-hour practice. That's what I'm thinking. Because I need him to get what I want. And when football teams win, players tend to stay on those teams. They tend to keep them together a lot. If football teams don't, they blow up the team and guys lose jobs. And then they have to go start all over again somewhere else. Some guys will make those teams. Some guys, hey, they're not that coach's guy. They'll, you know, it's better to win here. They need him to win here. So again, I am looking for something that says that he's got a breathing problem that's a medical condition that they need to handle medically and get him right.
Yeah, Isaiah Wilson. That was the name Trevor Maddich threw out there. Now, like, that's obviously, like, the absolute floor for any rookie or any player that is in the NFL. It's hard to be less accomplished than Isaiah Wilson was, not just as a first-round draft pick, but as a functioning player in the NFL. As a human being with a pulse in the National Football League, it is harder to achieve less. In order to achieve less, you just would have never actually touched the field for at least a snap, because that's what you got out of Isaiah Wilson. However, while I think the comparison right there might be a little presumptuous, premature, I see the concern, because if that's the biggest concern that you have about Treylon Burks right now, if the Titans are evaluating him and they say this is the biggest concern we have is that he won't be able to stay on the field because he's not in shape, or he showed up out of shape and we're afraid that he's not going to be able to be in NFL shape. If that is the case, and if that is an honest concern with the Tennessee Titans, you have to be a little fearful of that path of career destruction, because when I talked to someone with the Titans at rookie minicamp a few weeks ago, like, out of curiosity, like, Isaiah Wilson came up and we're talking about Isaiah Wilson, and it was like, what's the first thing you notice about him? It's because he's out of shape. The first thing anyone noticed was that he was just out of shape. He couldn't get through an entire practice. And I'll take their word for it, even though I do consider myself an expert on being out of shape. I am very good at being out of shape. I get winded walking up the steps here at our Hillside Medical Studios. Just walking up the steps to unlock the door and get myself into the studio is physically laborious to me. So I know out of shape when I see it. I'm an expert on it. And I can tell if you're in shape. But it was obvious to everyone, and if I would have been at those practices, I probably would have seen it too, that Isaiah Wilson was not in football shape. when we had Sam Pittman on talking with TD, now the head coach at Arkansas, the former offensive line coach at the University of Georgia, who coached Isaiah Wilson at that position. His first impression about Isaiah when they got him on campus at Athens, or in Athens, was this guy's out of shape. He had a hard time adjusting to the heat because he's from New York. He never experienced Southern heat like that in practices. He had to lose some weight. He had to get in shape, and he had a hard time doing it because he was never accustomed to practicing in that kind of heat. Now, he was able to at least carve out a good enough career at Georgia to convince and fool the Tennessee Titans into taking him in the first round. But I don't think Treylon Burks is in that level of out of shape. Is there something that needs to be figured out? Sure. Maybe. I doubt it's the allergies. I'm not going to use the allergies as an excuse. I think it's more likely that there were differences in training for the combine versus training for actual practices and getting in football shape. Sometimes if you haven't been practicing to the level of being in football shape, it can be hard to get back into football shape. So that's not something I'm terribly concerned about. Derek Mason said it perfectly today on Darren Donick and Chase. He said that I'll be concerned if he is like this in July, because then you have a really big bleeping problem on your hands. Because in a day of massive offenses where scoring is at an all-time high in the NFL, it's keeping up with the Joneses in terms of offensive arsenal. The Titans, when you trade away your number one receiver in the offseason during the draft, isn't necessarily keeping up with the Joneses when teams around you, like the Dolphins, trade for Tyreek Hill or the Raiders trade for Devontae Adams. Those teams are making some big moves. You got to be able to keep up with the scoring in your own division, or in your division and your conference, to be able to make a big run. And the Titans went two steps back by trading A.J. Brown, no matter how necessary it actually was. So if Treylon Burks isn't going to at least be productive enough to be a really, really good number two receiver or a complimentary receiver next to Robert Woods, you are in a heap of trouble. Because when there was no A.J. Brown last season, the Titans' passing game absolutely suffered. We'll get into that on the other side on how they suffered, what that offense looked like, and what it might be if Treylon Burks can't give you the bare minimum. We'll get into that and more on the other side. Just into the six right here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game, The Game Nashville app. So a lot is being made about Treylon Burks and his athletic shape, which I dove into a little bit here on the first segment of the six, and I'm not too concerned. And if it's an asthma issue, there's a really good text on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and it's from Corey. Corey says, you know, he has asthma, he has an inhaler, and he uses an inhaler more when he's active, especially during this time of year when the pollen levels are higher and they can irritate his allergies easier. I think that's possible. I think that, like, there probably is something to do with that, but I think there's still, I mean, he's probably lived with this. I don't want to be assuming too much about Treylon Burks' medical history, but I assume this is something he's probably dealt with his entire life. And I think it is more to do with him being maybe a little out of football shape. Because, like, here's the thing. As I mentioned in the last segment, I am an expert on being out of shape. I haven't been in shape in a decade, back when I was still playing high school basketball and AAU basketball. And I have not been in anything that resembles athletic shape since then. But when we say out of shape for him, it might just not be like football, like NFL shape. Like, football shape is different than basketball shape. And then, of course, all that's different than NFL shape, because the NFL is so much more physically demanding on your body. I personally think that's probably the biggest ailment here for Treylon Burks, is that it's an adjustment period. And other rookies are dealing with it too. Totally understand. And some work through it better than others initially. I will be concerned when we're in training camp and he's had time to get back into that football shape and NFL shape, that if it doesn't happen then you're in a whole lot of trouble, because Treylon Burks is going to have some very heavy expectations here. John Glennon said it on the morning show on Robbie and Rex Road that the expectations for Treylon Burks are going to be even unfair, because let's be realistic here. Rookie wide receiver, if he has 700 receiving yards, it's a solid season, right? But then replace 700 yards with A.J. Brown's worst statistical season, which was last year, which he had about 869 yards. And his worst, because he had the two seasons before that were 2,000-yard seasons. Putting 1,000 yards on the season for Treylon Burks is going to be tough. That's a tough ask for a rookie. I mean, not every rookie that's drafted is going to be Justin Jefferson in the first year or Ja'Marr Chase in the first year. And not every rookie is going to be Jalen Reagor, where their best season might be 350 yards, who was taken one pick before Justin Jefferson, mind you. So the expectations for both of those guys are similar because they were in similar situations. But for Treylon Burks, I was looking through his numbers at Arkansas because like the clear number one, and he's not going to supposed to be the number one for the Titans, but you need him to have that ceiling of being a number one because if you're going to long-term invest in Treylon Burks, he's going to have to one day be your number one because Robert Woods won't be the number one for this team forever. And last season, I found something very interesting is that Arkansas as a team, as an offense, threw for about 205 passing yards a game. And honestly, there were about six or seven games, I believe, where K.J. Jefferson, the quarterback for Arkansas, didn't even eclipse 200 yards passing. So it wasn't like they were a run-heavy offense, kind of like what the Titans are right now. But out of those 205 passing yards per game, Treylon Burks is responsible for 92 of those per game. That's a heavy workload, especially for a team that's not chucking the ball all over the yard. They're not Ole Miss. They're not Tennessee. But Arkansas was a good offense, a good run-first offense that had one receiver who was dominant and that they relied upon. How heavy did they rely upon him? Well, Treylon Burks led the team in receptions with 66 last season. No other receiver on Arkansas's team had more than 24 receptions. That's quite the workload. That's quite the offensive responsibility in a passing game for Treylon Burks. So the possibility is there. And every team that played Arkansas, the same reason I like Drake London is one of the reasons I like Treylon Burks coming out of college, was because you know that if the ball's in the air, more than likely it is going to that player. And teams could game plan around that. And teams did in the SEC. And sometimes they still didn't stop them. See the Alabama game from last year, where Treylon Burks had a phenomenal game. And you could tell Alabama, team that went to the national championship game, the only team to beat Georgia. I don't have to flash Alabama's credentials, but keyed in on Treylon Burks, and he still tore him up in an offense that's not oriented around the passing game. But you're going to need him. I'd say the line of demarcation here is going to be 750 yards. You're going to need at least 750 yards from Treylon Burks for this offense to keep up. You don't know what you're going to get out of Robert Woods. Mike Vrabel mentioned that he expects him to be healthy for training camp, expects him to be ready for week one against the Giants, and I kind of do too, based on the timeline here, and assuming he's not rushing anything, because you don't want to rush this, because ask Bud Dupree what happens when you rush return from an ACL injury. Sometimes you're not yourself, especially mentally. So Robert Woods is going to be the assumed number one. I feel pretty good about that. Treylon Burks, number two. But, like, the receiving depth on this team is troublesome. Nick Westbrook-Ikhina going to be the number three? Are you going to get anything out of Des Fitzpatrick this year? I know he came along a little bit as of late, or later in the season. But you're going to need a lot more out of those guys in terms of receiving depth to be able to keep up with a lot of these teams in the AFC. Is Kyle Phillips going to step in and be your reliable slot receiver? I thought he looked great in rookie minicamp. I thought he looked reliable. I can use all the famous, funny, like white wide receiver cliches that he's sneaky athletic, a lunch pail guy, and a real gym rat. But he did look athletic enough to be able to get himself open. He got himself open pretty well in 7-on-7. And I know 7-on-7's not like actual football, like real football reps. But I think if he's able to beat Mason Kinsey out for that job, because I don't think both of those guys are making that team. I think one of them is, because they're competing for the same spot. I think Kyle Phillips might be your slot receiver for the Titans. So you throw him in the equation. Is Racy McMath going to be anything more than a special teams guy? I doubt it. I highly doubt it. Because you needed something out of McMath. Now, I went back and looked at all the games in which the Titans played without A.J. Brown. And we can start with the first one. against the Jets on the road, they had to run the ball 34 times, in which Derrick Henry ran for 33 of them and ran for 157 yards and basically was the offense. Titans only scored 24 points, and your leading receiver in that game was Jeremy McNichols, 8 catches, 74 yards out of the backfield. Tannehill almost throws for 300 yards. Honestly, it was a decent passing game for Ryan Tannehill, but it was heavily predicated on Derrick Henry being an absolute monster on the ground, which I don't think is something you can bank on this year like you've been able to bank on it in the past. The wide receivers for that team, or the wide receivers for the Titans that are still on the team now, grand total of 3 catches, 29 yards, all of which came from Nick Westbrook-Ikhina. Against the Patriots on the road, they ran the ball 34 times again, only threw for 93 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. They only scored 13 points and got boat raced in the second half because turnovers killed them. And it wasn't like the Patriots were just this offensive machine. The Titans had some bad turnovers, some bad fumbles, a bad interception in the red zone. But the offense wasn't moving the ball over the field through the air either. They're still heavily dependent on the running game, even without Derrick Henry. But only 93 yards in the air, and the wide receivers that are still on the team now made up for 5 catches, 61 yards in that game. Your leading receiver with 2 catches and 25 yards and a touchdown. You guessed it, Nick Westbrook-Ikhina. This is what it looks like when Nick Westbrook-Ikhina has to be your 1 or 2 option. Against the Jaguars, the really bad Jags. This is not just the bad Jags. This is the Jags a week after all of the Urban Meyer story stuff came out. All of, like, the he's probably going to get fired. The Josh Lambeau thing, which is the straw that broke the camel's back in Jacksonville. The week after that story, their first game since that story broke, in which everyone in America knew that Urban Meyer wasn't just on thin ice, but he was below the ice. His head wasn't even the tip of the iceberg. He was fully submerged in said ice. But in that game, they only had to score 20 points because they scored 20 points, only had to score 1 because the Jags didn't score at all. So the bar was really low in order to win that game. Ran the ball 27 times, threw the ball 31, but for only 191 yards, not a touchdown was thrown, not an interception was thrown. But your leading receiver in that game was Anthony Firkser with 4 catches, 34 yards. Now, Jeff Swaim had more receiving yards, 3 catches for 45 yards. But your two tight ends, leading pass catcher, leading receiver, the wide receivers on the roster that are on the roster today, on May 25th, 2022, collected a combined 5 catches for 46 yards. And lastly, at the Steelers, only scored 13 points, had to run the ball 37 times, only threw for 153 total yards, no touchdowns were thrown, 1 interception. Your leading receiver was, of course, Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, 4 catches, 32 yards. All the wide receivers that are on the roster right now combined 6 catches for 36 yards. Without a really good number one wide receiver, this offense was cooked. The offense didn't get that much better as the season went on and they got healthier. And that was evident towards the end of the season, with the exception of the Houston Texans game, in which it kind of looked like the Titans offense that we were promised back last May was going to come to fruition, that quite honestly never did. But without A.J. Brown and without a receiver not named Julio Jones, the offense was pretty rough. It looked really bad. And in a conference in which every other team is loading up and are acquiring weapons like it's Cold War Soviet Union, you can't go out there with squirt guns, man. They ain't going to cut it. And if Nick Westbrook-Ikhina is a number two receiver, if Robert Woods isn't healthy all season, if Treylon Burks isn't in shape, which is the worst-case scenario for this Tennessee Titans team right now, this offense doesn't have a chance to win more than 9 games. Taking your text and your call, 615-737-1025. Phones are open. Ask anything. We have some texts we can get to on the other side. And I talk about the receiving depth, but here's another question, too. Is there anything the Titans can do about it today? I'll answer that on the other side. You're listening to The Six here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, the game Nashville app. Well, that's certainly one way to put it. Something fun. The Six is always fun here on 102.5, 106.3, the game Nashville app. As always, I'm Elijah Campbell, K conducting this train and trying to keep it on the rails somewhat. Jared Cassie behind the glass spinning the tunes. And we have a text on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And I want to try to say this. I want to try to pronounce this. I've never seen this word in my life. See, I love our texters and our callers. And I love that they assume that I'm not an idiot. I have never seen this word in my life. So I'm going to try to get hooked on phonics and get through this. And whenever I botch it, it can be entertainment for everybody. But Matthew on our text line says, maybe Traylon has Borreliosis. B-U-R-R-E-L-L-I-O-S-I-S. I assume it's Borreliosis. But I, like I said, everyone does a really good job of assuming that I'm not an idiot. But I want to say, I want to guess that's what that word is. Has Borreliosis from playing with wild pigs. You might be, I don't know. I don't even know what that is. So I'm not going to rule it out. I can't wait for Matthew to text back in and say, man, you botched that word. Fantastic. Matt in Mount Juliet. Different Matt here with words that I know for a fact I can pronounce and that I know the meanings of. This draft feels a lot like the Preds' quote-unquote competitive rebuild. It seems like we drafted a lot of quote-unquote raw players with high ceilings with time. Do you think the Titans really believe we're still contenders for the upcoming season? Now, that's an interesting question because you don't... It's hard to trade someone like A.J. Brown who meant so much to your team, who had 23% of the targets on your team, and be, man, our offense got better. They can't honestly believe that. I think they obviously wanted to keep AJ around because they know his value to the team. Because they know that with him and Derrick Henry, even with Julio Jones being at like 20% on the entire season, you had an offense that was at least good enough to get you the number one seed in the AFC, win the division pretty handily, and have a chance, have a puncher's chance to run through the AFC. You were one stupid throw away from beating the team that represented the conference in the Super Bowl. And I think if the Bengals won that game, I think that against the Chiefs, I think the Titans would have had a really good chance as well, especially since this is at Nissan Stadium. And we all know that Pat Mahomes has not had a great history of playing the Titans in Nashville. So anything could have happened. And of course, if ifs and thens were pots and pans, the world would be a kitchen. So I can't say for sure. But to answer Matt's question and address the text here, it does feel like the Titans, I don't want to say are punting on contending for a Super Bowl. I think given the hand they were dealt in terms of A.J. Brown is not touching the field unless you overpay for him in a contract that you are not willing to commit to, did what they had to do to trade him and did what they thought was best to be able to replace as much of that production as possible. And they tried to help in other areas too with drafting Chig Okonkwo at tight end to give you another pass-catching option, I think, which is a very positive addition. And then drafting Kyle Phillips later on in the draft too to give you at least another wide receiver who can contend for the slot receiver role. So I don't think that the Titans made this move because they're contending for a Super Bowl. I think this was just the best move they could make right now with a high ceiling, considering so many other wide receivers were snagged off the board. This is one of the deeper wide receiving classes in the history of the NFL draft. And how many guys went flying off the board before Treylon Burks? A lot. Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, Drake London. A lot of really desirable wide receivers were already off the board. So at that point, if you don't trade up, and if you don't get the Eagles' first-round pick in that, you're definitely not getting Treylon Burks at 26. Wouldn't have thought so. But do the Titans still believe they're contenders the upcoming season? I think they want to believe that. But with so much uncertainty with how Robert Woods is going to look with Ryan Tannehill and with how this passing game is going to be, you just got to hope you make it out of your division, man. Because the Colts are coming. The Colts beefed up on defense. And if your offense isn't up to snuff, you're going to play against that defense that got a lot better by adding Yannick Ngakoue on the front end and Stephon Gilmore, whatever's left of him, which I still think there's a little bit of, on the back end. Play those dudes twice this year. And the Jags aren't going to be as big of a pushover as they were last year. They could easily steal a game from you this year. The Texans, whatever. I'll believe it when I see it. But you got to make sure you just get out of this division, man, because the teams in this conference definitely loaded up. at that position.
Another thing on the Colts, too, you're not playing them later on in the year. You're playing them earlier than you typically do, especially for that second game, too. So if you don't, if you definitely don't split them, if you go 0-2, it's not going to look too good for
them.
It's
an uphill battle. I mean, then you have no choice but to get a whole lot better. And that pressure, especially if it's like, hypothetically speaking, the offense is the thing keeping them back. The offense is the reason they couldn't beat Indianapolis. You drop those two games. Treylon Burks is underperforming. Then the pressure on him gets a lot bigger. It gets almost unbearable because then you have the pressure of not just having him perform to pick up the slack in the offense, but to dig yourself out of a two-game hole potentially against the Indianapolis Colts, assuming they play relatively well before that. Because like you mentioned, Jared, both those games are done before Halloween. So that could really dictate a lot of things here. And we're talking about the receiving core, too, because like one of the reasons all this pressure's on Burks is because they're not deep at receiver. And one of the questions I have is there anybody out there that can help? I know like the Colts have probably the better receiver than anybody else in the division right now. Michael Pittman Jr. is a stud. And even though they're not deep, I think they drafted well by getting Alec Pierce from Cincinnati, who will be a really good addition to that team, I think is going to surprise a lot of people. And then, of course, they drafted Jelani Woods, the 6'7 tight end from the University of Virginia. So at least in terms of, like the Titans, they added a really good pass-catching tight end to be a weapon. But they're kind of comparable there, right? The Colts aren't very deep wide receiver-wise. But I think you need to have that advantage on them because Matt Ryan, Ryan Tannehill are kind of similar at this stage in their career, even though I think Ryan Tannehill is a little better than Matt Ryan is in the year of our Lord 2022. So what free agents are available? Paul Karski kind of ripped the guys this morning on Robbie and Rex Road because free agency is in March. Who can possibly be out there to make this better? Titans have roughly, what, $2 million, I guess, in cap space? But Cole Beasley still hadn't signed. 33 years old. I know you drafted Kyle Phillips to be that slot receiver. But if you don't feel like him or Mason Kinsey are coming along, might not be a bad idea to take that flyer. The biggest name out there, though, is in Will Fuller, 28 years old, and his last contract with Miami was worth about, I think, $10 million is the cap hit, somewhere from 6 to 10. But not a lot of teams are obviously vying for him because he's not on a team right now. Hadn't played. He might give you six good games in a year, barring injury or PED suspension. I think he played one game for Miami last year, one or two games. It wasn't a lot. He is habitually hurt. It is a habit that he gets hurt and misses a chunk of games. So do you even want to get somebody who's not going to be available at all times? However, when he does play, his last real season, 2020, was his most productive. Had a really good season, torched the Titans at Nissan Stadium. Him and Deshaun Watson put up a passing game clinic. And that was during a stretch in which Will Fuller was really good. Before, time to say the line, he got hurt. So do you put a $2 million flyer on him? Because I don't think he's in a position to really turn down 1 year, $2 million. I don't think he is. But there's other guys out there. Do you put 1 year, $1.5 million for Emmanuel Sanders, who played for less than $2 million last season with Buffalo? Obviously, the wide receiver room in Buffalo is getting a lot more crowded considering Gabriel Davis had a breakout season and a breakout playoff run with Buffalo that Emmanuel Sanders kind of got played out in that lineup. He could still be a solid number three. If Treylon Burks progresses to give you about 700 to 900 receiving yards, and Emmanuel Sanders can be trusted to get you about 400 to 550 and a few touchdowns here or there. How much is realistically in the tank there? I think that might be the ceiling for a guy who is 35 years old at the moment. But for $1 million in 1 year, it's an avenue. It's an option. Exactly. And if the depth of this wide receiving core is that much of a concern, like I think it's going to be, I think we're going to be talking about wide receiver depth well into the season. These are possible avenues that I think the Titans should at least consider. Because, like I mentioned earlier, and I'm going to beat this dead horse all offseason and all season long. AFC, pretty damn good when it comes to receivers, when it comes to weapons, and when it comes to high-flying offenses. And I don't know if your defense is good, but I don't know if it's that good to keep you in every single one of those games to contend for a Super Bowl. Coming up next, time to break down Game 5. Heat, Celtics, because that's coming up next after we go off the air here. Two teams that are trading body blows, or not even body blows, head blows at this point. They're beating the hell out of each other. Pivotal Game 5 tonight. We'll also give you some gambling picks, too, because there's some action in the Stanley Cup playoffs as well. It's time to get you ready for the sports afternoon here in the next segment to close out the six here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game, and the Game Nashville app. So when you abbreviate a lot of these team names, NBA, NFL, NHL, whatever, Miami is usually MIA, right? Well, that's about the only way you could describe the Miami Heat offense in Game 4 against the Boston Celtics. They were MIA, missing in action. And I think that's the only way you can adequately describe a team that had about 1 point with 4.5 minutes to go in the first quarter. 1 point. Missed like their first 14 or 15 shots. A game after absolutely bludgeoning the Celtics for most of the game without their best scorer, Jimmy Butler. Game 5 between these two teams is going to be up next here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game. So here on the 6, we figured we'd give you a little bit of a preview. Our resident Celtics fan, Jared Cassidy, behind the glass and spinning the tunes. Feeling a little nervous, feeling a little pumped. But Jared, big one here in Miami. The Celtics are fantastic on the road. They won a pivotal, down 3-2 in a series against Milwaukee, against the defending champion Milwaukee Bucks, against arguably the best player in the world, Giannis Antetokounmpo. Were able to pull out a win on the road. Big game from Jason Tatum. They were road warriors in the last series. They're going to have to be road warriors tonight and win their second of three in Miami, because I think it's going to be really tough, especially the way that Miami is able to play at times, to win two straight against them. But how do you feel about your Celtics' chances here on stealing one on the road to set up a game 6 at home to go to the NBA Finals?
Well, the road warriors is the exact thing you needed to say. They have not played well at the Garden. It's very un-Celtics-like for the many games that I've watched.
I know. Yeah, out of all the teams that have played really well at home in the NBA playoffs this year, like, the Celtics are the one team remaining that just don't. I know the Mavericks had that one exception when they beat the Phoenix Suns
right into
submission by, like, 50 in a Game 7. But no, those other three games in Phoenix weren't very close. And they've blown some games in Golden State this year, too, so they haven't played very well on the road.
Yeah, they haven't. I also did just see where Tyler Hero will not be playing tonight either. So
he's been very shaky. He has not had a fantastic playoffs.
Yeah, it's not been too great for him. Celtics just play great D, and I don't know, coming here, coming on the road, they know that, obviously, both teams know what's at stake.
Mm-hmm.
I just think the Celtics need it a little bit more. Going back to Boston, like you said, Game 6, like, if they can get the home crowd advantage in one game, it's got to be 6, right? Like,
yep.
I mean, that's it, obviously. Like, that's the only one, but it's do-or-die time for them, basically. And I said that on our show on Saturday morning.
Gambling can ask it. That's right.
Do or die time. I see. You know, they just don't play them very well. I mean, you have to put that behind you. You have to look at it as in the micro and not the macro, basically.
Yeah.
Just got to win this game. Tough place to play in the MIA. Let's hope it works out. Hopefully they are MIA.
You're going to want them to be MIA again, because you know what MIA looked like for the Heat in Game 4? It's the entire starting lineup combined scoring 18 points for the starting lineup. They didn't have a starter score in double figures. They did not have a starter score in double figures. Derek White by himself scored 13 points. He almost scored the same amount of points as the entire Heat starting lineup combined. That is bonkers. And that's one of the reasons why that game wasn't even remotely close. And man, Jimmy Butler shoots 3-for-14. Heat aren't winning any game against any team that was in the playoff field 2 weeks ago. That's pretty remarkable. Like, holding him to 6 points, I think his knee's bothering him a little bit. And with no Tyler Hero, even though he didn't play last game either, you're going to have to get a lot of minutes out of Duncan Robinson, who as we all know, hadn't played a lot because he can't play any defense. He can't guard the chairs we're sitting in right now, Jared, one-on-one.
Yeah, he's a liability.
He is very much so a liability. And that's why every time he's in the game, watch, whenever they put him in, they're going to try their best to hide him by playing zone. That's all they can do. And the Celtics are so good offensively that they can at least pick their spots and have to make open threes. Because they'll be able to get some open threes because the Heat are going to have to be able to get offensive production. And if Butler's not 100%, and if Tyler Hero's not there, which he's not going to be tonight, you're going to be relying a lot on offensive production from Kyle Lowry, PJ Tucker, Bam Adebayo, who Adebayo in game three was an absolute superstar. I mean, looked almost all NBA levels in that game. But you're not going to get 29 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists in this one. At least I highly doubt it, right? You're going to need Duncan Robinson to help you out. And if you're not going to be, if you're going to put him out there for 24 minutes, I have a feeling that's 24 minutes of zone defense. So the X factor would be, like a lot of NBA games, is how well will the Celtics be able to knock down open threes? The Celtics are favored by 3.5 tonight, at least on the sports book of my choice. No free pub here, sorry. But on the sports book of my choice, it is right now Celtics minus 3.5 on the road. And man, it's tough, Jared, because I love taking home dogs, especially in the playoffs, especially when it gets down to this part of the playoffs. When you're in a conference final situation, a home dog plus 3.5 is really hard to turn down, but I love the Celtics team. I think their defense is better. I think they have better numbers of defenders. Now, Miami as a team defense, really, really good. Elite, if you will. Very switchable. But not when they have to play Duncan Robinson 25 minutes, which I think they're going to have to do as well. I don't think Victor Oladipo plays very good defense, even though he's great in Game 3. I think that might be a little more of an outlier than what the actual trend is. I trust the Celtics, and I've almost bet on the Celtics every game in this series because I just feel like on the normal day, I think they have the more high-ceiling superstar. I know Jimmy Butler's put up 40 in these playoffs several occasions, and playoff Jimmy Butler is a hell of a lot different than regular season Jimmy Butler. But I think this is time for Jason Tatum to make that step. 31 points in the last game. He doesn't have to be shooting threes really well, too. He got to the line 16 times in that game. I think he's going to have to be able to do it in Miami, and I just have a feeling that they do. And none of these games have been within 3 points. So my brain tells me to take the minus 3.5 for the Celtics, but my betting, I guess, chops tell me that a plus 3.5 at home in a conference final is almost too juicy of a deal to pass up.
True. Very true. You know, it's tough to go against the Celtics, like you said.
Hard to. My basketball brain tells me no.
Yeah. The only thing, though, you can hide Robinson for a little bit. You can't hide him for 24, 25 minutes.
It gets hard to because that's impossible. A lot of possessions, you know?
Yeah, and plus, I don't know, if you're putting that much stock in Jimmy Butler, and he's great, but at times he does go absent on the court.
Especially when his knee's like this.
Right, and especially with his scoring woes, too. I mean, it's pretty much chalk for me, but I'll take the Celtics 3.5.
I think I will, too. Count me in for Celtics 3.5. In the other game, in the Stanley Cup playoffs, Avs have a chance to close out the Blues tonight. No Jordan Bennington, so Villy, don't call me Donick Huso, is going to be in the net for the Blues again. I don't trust them at all. I think if it was going to happen, if you are going to be able to get yourself back in contention in the series, it would have been done in St. Louis. It wasn't done in St. Louis. I think this Avalanche team has been so snake-bitten in the playoffs. This is their chance. They see this. They smell blood. And they're going to absolutely beat the brakes off of the Blues. I say take the Avalanche on the puck line tonight, minus 1.5. That one feels right. I feel more confident about that one than I do the NBA game.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely more hockey.
Mm-hmm. Definitely
the,
so.
The over-under for that game is intriguing.
6.5.
My sports book, 6.5. I would go with the over in this one tonight.
I thought about that.
Yep.
Solely because Huso hasn't played like he did in the regular season. I know like in the regular season, the Blues split time between those guys relatively well, and there wasn't a drop-off, but in the playoffs, there's been a drop-off, you know. Jordan
right.
Bennington's playoff experience in winning a cup and carrying them in a lot of instances during that run, I think, was proven to be pretty valuable, and Huso doesn't really have that. So I think Philly gives up three or four. And if they give up four goals, I mean, you're asking for just three from the Blues. And if that's the case, it's not out of the realm of possibility, just because I think this is a desperation game. As we've seen here in Nashville, the Blues can put pucks on the net with regularity, and they're going to have to in order to save their season. I was a little more hesitant on the over-under, but I don't think over 6.5 is bad for this, because also Darcy Kuemper, while the Avalanche haven't given up a ton of points or a ton of goals, I guess, in this playoff run so far, I don't think it's all necessarily because Darcy Kuemper has played that otherworldly. Right. I think he's been vulnerable at times. So two vulnerable goalies is ripe for a possible over. So Jared likes the over. He likes the Avalanche and the Celtics minus 3.5. I do too. Coming up next is that Game 5, coverage of Game 5 on ESPN Radio between the Celtics and the Heat. Thanks for hanging in there. You've been listening to The Six. We'll be back same time tomorrow right here on ESPN, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and, of course, the Game Nashville app.